Funding for this podcast comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink software, accelerating the pace of engineering and science. Learn more at MathWorks.com.
Major funding for On Point is provided by Liberty Mutual for all your auto, home, life, and business insurance needs. Liberty Mutual. Responsibility. What's your policy?
From WBUR Boston, I'm Tom Asbrook, and this is On Point. We could use all the wisdom in the world in Washington right now. A whole lot of it has been distilled over the centuries into proverbs, pithy, sometimes goofy sayings meant to capture a basic insight on life and human nature. My guest today, David Crystal, has gone around the world collecting proverbs from China, Congo, Scotland, Madagascar. They are telling in surprising ways. Treasury Secretary Hank Paulson seems to be following the French Foreign Legion proverb this week, when in doubt, gallop. This hour On Point, proverbs from around the world. You can join the conversation. What proverbs were passed down in your family? What old wise saying would you recommend to Washington, investors, Wall Street, all of us right now? Joining me today from North Wales is David Crystal, writer, editor, lecturer, and one of the world's most widely published commentators on language. He's honorary professor of linguistics at the University of Wales. His books include The Cambridge Encyclopedia of Language, By Hook or By Crook, A Journey in Search of English, and Shakespeare's Words. His new book, a whopping huge collection, is As They Say in Zanzibar, Proverbial Wisdom from Around the World. David Crystal, thank you very much for being with us today.
Hey, hi, Tom. It's a real pleasure to be with you.
And I should say right off the top that at our website, onpointradio.org, you can read a big grab bag of proverbs that we've taken right off the top of David Crystal's enormous collection here. Maybe some food for thought right there. David Crystal, of all things, you've looked at words inside and out, upside and backwards and down and around. Why proverbs? What got you stuck on this train?
Well, because there wasn't one. I mean, there are lots of little books on proverbs, of course. You go to any country in the world, you'll find in the bookshop there a tiny little book of some sort. But nobody seems to have collected them all together from around the world, at least not for over a century. I found one Victorian book when I was looking where somebody tried to do that. So it's just because it hadn't been done. And once you start, of course, like all obsessives in language, you can't stop.
And so there you are with a couple of thousand that you've collected here, and not by any means all from English-speaking countries, not at all. They're really from right around the world. Whatever the language, what makes a saying a proverb? Is every old saying a proverb?
No, there's got to be something shaping it to make it a nugget of wisdom. Yes, you're right, they do come from all over the world, and seeing them from these different countries does provide a completely different perspective on what wisdom is all about. I guess we'll see examples in a few minutes, but the essential thing about a proverb is, first of all, it's succinctness. It's saying something in a very short way. The average length of the proverbs in this collection is just 8 words. Mm. It's very rare you get a proverb longer than that. And usually they're nice and rhythmically balanced, and they sum everything up. You know, if it's not this, then it's that. You know, you get this two-part sort of effect, summarizing knowledge in a very succinct way and making it very memorable, of course. That's the thing. It's no good having a proverb if you can't remember it.
We all know bazillions of them from the English language, whether or not we're really aware. I mean, you know, all good things come to an end, time and tide, wait for no one. Does every country, every culture, every language have its stock?
Yes, everyone that I've studied anyway. I mean, I didn't go everywhere, of course. Life's too short. But I have found that there must be about 500,000 proverbs around the world in some shape or form. So my little collection, even though you're quite right, it does look quite large, but in fact it's only a tiny selection out of everything. They've all got them. And the fascinating thing is that they show you the same about the human race and the differences about the human race. You know, in one sense, everybody's saying the same thing. Everybody's worried about something or warning about something or recommending some sort of behavior or asking for certain types of charity or kindness or courtesy or whatever it might be. And yet, they interpret these general human feelings in very local ways. So although over in our part of the world, for instance, we might talk about going across the river in a ferry boat or something in another part of the world, they talk about going across the river in a canoe. And whereas we might be worried about one sort of problem, they're worried about crocodiles, you know. So it varies so much how they interpret this particular point.
You start with Zanzibar right in the title, and you've got this wonderful one. A coconut shell full of water is a sea to an ant.
To an ant.
Yes. Kind of cosmic right there. You found, and anybody can kind of sit and understand that. I found some that weren't exactly that easy for me to follow when you get out there. Here's one from Cameroon. On a slimy shore, it is easy to push a canoe. Now, I'm missing something, and I'm not sure what a slimy shore is or why you'd be pushing a canoe on it. But
yeah, well, this is one of the interesting things, and I guess when some of your callers call us in a little while, we'll have that precise problem. You know, you can have one proverb, and it means two totally different things to two different people. And you have to know a little bit about the local culture in order to be sure that you are grasping the meaning. I mean, does the slimy shore mean that there's a you know, a climate of evil or difficulty that you've got to get your way through in order to get success, you know, or is it something completely different? That's the beauty about a proverb. You can put it in front of... I did this, you know, when I was preparing the book. I would take some proverbs and put them in front of people and say, write down what you think they mean. And even within Britain or within the United States, you'll get different people saying different things. I mean, take, you know, the current economic climate at the moment.
Yes.
And you have a proverb like, say, bad is called good when worse happens.
Bad is called good when worse happens. Norwegian, if I remember.
Norwegian one, that's right, yes, well remembered. Or don't look where you fell, but where you slipped. That one's from Liberia. But imagine now somebody talking about the current economic crisis that we're all being affected by, and somebody just drops into the conversation, don't look where you fell, but where you slipped. And that immediately puts a perspective on everything. You think, oops, yes, shouldn't be talking so much about the strategy now, but how this whole business started in the first place.
Yeah.
So that would interpret it in an economic way in that context, I guess.
And then some, the French Foreign Legion really did catch my eye there. When in doubt, gallop. And it's a lot of galloping around in Washington this week. Some absolutely mystifying. You've got a German one here. Rhubarb and patience work wonders. I didn't know what to make of that. Maybe there's some homeopathic meaning that's evading me there.
But this is a common feature of proverbs, that they juxtapose two unrelated concepts in order to show that one of them isn't as wonderful as you might have thought. You know, patience works wonders. And now you put something silly like rhubarb along with it, and that makes you think about patience a little bit. And you begin to wonder, you know, exactly what the point is. I mean, there are some in here I don't understand. Tom, even now, you know, after asking people, that Irish one that's on the back of the book, you must have noticed, never bolt your door with a boiled carrot.
Okay.
Does that mean?
I think steel or iron might be more effective, you know.
I mean, you have to say it in an Irish accent, of course, to get the effect. I never bolt your door with a boiled carrot, you know. You have to have it like that, otherwise it doesn't work.
Sounds like a weak barricade, maybe. There is... In whatever language or accent, you say there is a kind of ideal structure to a proverb, to the sound of it. I mean, it wants to have a certain balance and a certain thrust.
Yeah, there are four things, really, to make a proverb. First of all, and they're all to do with the phonetics, the sounds of it, really. There has to be some sort of metrical structure, some rhythm, you know, a tumpty-tumpty-tum sort of rhythm, like absence makes the heart grow fonder, da-da-da-da, and you remember that. A second feature has got to be good rhyme. There's a lot of rhyme in a lot of them. A good cat deserves a good rat. You know, that, and you remember that because of the rhyme. And then there's alliteration. You know, the initial letters often resound like full of courtesy, full of craft. And you get the sort of the F and the C and the F and the C, and it all sort of sticks. It's all to help you remember these things. And then... there has to be the succinctness that we talked about. A lot of these proverbs are very, very short indeed, you know, like money talks or pigs might fly, you know, that sort of thing. Mm-hmm. So it's all aiming at getting something into the popular minds about it stays there for generation after generation. And I'm sure you're quite right. You know, there'll be people listening now who'll say, I remember my grandmother telling me, and that might be 50 years ago.
Not everybody in your circle welcomed a conversation about Proverbs when you got into this. I mean, there's some sort of dark dull reputation here as dull language, as old sayings, who needs it, not creative, not hip, not up to date.
Oh, absolutely. That was one of the first things I found. You know, I'd never had that with a book before. I mean, when I start to write a book and people ask me, what am I doing? They usually, oh, that's very interesting. Mm. But when I said Proverbs, I couldn't believe it. And they said exactly what you said, you know, that they're old hat, they're cliche. Nobody uses Proverbs now. But, you know, as you start going into the conversation with them, what I used to do to prove them wrong was just sort of drop a proverb in without them really realizing it and saying something like, well, you know, ask a silly question. And they'd all say, yeah, ask a silly question, that's right. And then you sit and say, well, that's a proverb, you know.
Get a silly answer and there you're in it.
And that's the way you prove it, you see, because you don't give them the whole proverb. You just give them the first bit and they can complete the second bit. You know, you say people in glass houses. And everybody says, you know, mustn't throw stones, you know. And so it proves that they have these proverbs inside their heads all the time. So they may think of them as being old-fashioned, but in fact, they rely on them a lot.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking today about proverbs, old sayings, wise sayings from around the world and what they tell us about human nature, human insight, and the many ways we capture those. My guest is David Crystal. He joins us from North Wales, but he's been right around the world collecting proverbs, a couple of thousand of them, in his new book, As They Say in Zanzibar, Proverbial Wisdom from Around the World. You can join the conversation. What proverbs, old sayings, still get used around your kitchen table? What proverbs did your grandma drive you crazy with? And what proverbs have you picked up maybe in your travels? A gem from Swaziland, a bolt of insight from Bhutan. David Crystal joins us from North Wales, and I'm looking here in your section on speed. You've got this organized kind of by theme. And here's some quick advice that I just saw maybe for Washington right now in the midst of all this economic crisis. I know you've got your own in the UK there. But here's what Germany. What is the use of running when we're not on the right road? Turkey, looking at this bailout plan and the speed with which it's being pushed through, they give twice who give quickly. Morocco, slowness comes from God and quickness from the devil. I don't know. The Netherlands, one cannot shoe a running horse. And from your backyard there, England, more haste, less speed. Plenty to chew on there, David Crystal.
Yeah. Wow. Aren't they great? Yes. Listen in, guys. Right. A fool and his money are soon parted.
Yeah.
Lone pebble can start a landslide.
Down it comes, and we're buried in Proverbs. Let's go to our listeners, David. Here's Chad calling from Newport News, Virginia. Chad, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom. Hi. Thanks for taking my call. I don't even know if it qualifies as strictly a proverb, but something my father passed down to me from his grandfather and all the way on up the line was the best way to stay out of trouble is to stay, or the best way to stay out of trouble is to stay away from trouble. And that one has certainly helped me out in my life.
Stay out of trouble by staying away from trouble. I mean, it's so obvious that it's obvious, but then that's what it takes.
A lot of proverbs are like that, Chad. Yeah, I mean, they state the obvious, but they state it in such a succinct and balanced way that they suddenly seem less obvious than they were before. I've heard that one, in fact, in a few other places.
You know, I'm struck by, Chad says it came from his dad. The way these get into our ears and minds very early in life, you know, you discount them, but then you think back, it does seem to me that these get incorporated as part. And I'm not sure what the neurolinguistics are here, but it's as part of sort of setting the way we look at the world. That's a very fundamental piece of advice. It's still coming back to him, obviously, years after his dad passed it to him, whether he thinks of it explicitly every time it guides him or not, it seems to me, David Crystal.
Yeah, I think that's absolutely right. You know, people internalize proverbs. They make them their own. They have their favorites. And it doesn't take long before they'll come out with them. It only takes a moment. Some proverbs actually become so part of the language that one forgets that they were proverbs. You know, they become almost like idioms or catchphrases. I mean, one of the most famous ones, I suppose, started, do you remember Laughing years ago, Rowan and Martin, and the character that Flip played, who used to say things like, what you see is what you get.
Yes, sure. Yeah? Sure.
And that became WYSIWYG. You know, and everybody in the computer world now knows about WYSIWYG, and what you see is what you get. And there's a lovely example of what began as an everyday catchphrase. Everybody took it up. It became almost proverbial in character, and then eventually has siphoned off into a part of our world, and we don't even remember its origin.
And the sort of very contemporary technical computer era, with plenty of its contributions here, the proverbs, maybe old hat in some way, but garbage in, garbage out, straight out of the computer era.
Yeah, there are not that many. I was looking out for those and trying to collect as many as I could, and found very, very few. But what I did find was the way in which computer geeks love to mess up proverbs in order to make a new point. I've got a little collection in the book. You may have noticed it, page 541. Things like Windows will never cease.
You know, that's very zen.
Yeah, based on wonders will never cease, or the modem is the message.
Okay.
You can't teach a new mouse old clicks.
It's not exactly guiding my ship yet, but we'll stick with it. We got Clay calling from Townsend, Vermont. Hi, Clay, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
I don't know if your guest has one of these in his book or can make one up on the spot. I'm wondering if there's a proverb that would describe what I see happening with the presidential debate tomorrow night. If I look at the McCain-Obama debate as two opponents in a draw, that the old Western days that our country was founded on, where they get their pistols and walk down the dusty road 20 paces, turn around and shoot. And what we have for Friday night is all of a sudden one of the contestants is out of sight. Obviously, McCain, who's knocked out of the debate. Is there a proverb that addresses that kind of a situation where the opponent just vanishes?
Let us see what we can do, Clay.
Wow.
David Crystal. Here's first of all just the debate itself, the contest, the gladiators in the arena. But then, as Clay says, as John McCain says, it may be only one. Obama says he'll show at the podium. John McCain now saying he may or may not.
Well, there's that old Japanese proverb which goes in translation, those who make the first bad move always lose the game.
So there may
be some relevance there.
If it's a bad move, I've got one here I see in your collection from the Republic of Congo. If you don't want the gun to go off, don't cock the trigger. Maybe McCain's just not cogging.
And then there's that one from your part of the world, actually. It goes back 100 years or so. Beware the man with only one gun.
I'm mystified by that.
Now, you have to take a thought. You see, anybody with two, because the routine was two guns, but anybody with one gun must be so good that he doesn't need a second gun, you see. So he's really special. Somebody who comes to a political debate with just one big point, you know, beware him.
Yeah, all right. And then, of course, the famous, and this one from your Zanzibar, when I've heard this is many different ways, but when two elephants struggle, it's the grass that suffers.
Yes.
If two elephants do end up struggling. Let's get a call from Charles in Nashville, Tennessee. Charles, you're on the air.
Hey, Tom, thanks for having me on.
Certainly.
I grew up on a beef farm back in West Virginia.
Beef, cattle, yeah.
As a little kid, my father always taught me, screw with the bull, you get the horn.
don't mess with the big bull.
Yeah, and I guess that could even be applied to a bull market in the stock market today, even.
Yeah, watch out. Mess around with the mean one, and it may end up poking you in the hindquarters.
That's right. It can be applied to very many situations growing up in life.
Yeah, I love it. Thanks very much for that. Let's get another from Winchester, Massachusetts. Amy, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
My proverb that I have heard is, pray to God, but hammer away.
Interpret for us, Amy. I think I've got it, but how do you take the message?
Well, just I'm a person of faith, but that doesn't mean I don't do all that I can to work hard and, you know, achieve things that I can achieve.
Ryan, so don't wait on the Lord. There's many ways of putting that one, but I love it, Amy. Thanks for that, David Crystal. Is that sparking
something?
Yeah,
that's very typical. Where the proverb basic, a lot of proverbs around the world are basically of the sort. Do your own thing, you know. Get on with it. Don't rely on anybody else. I mean, it might work, it might not work, and deities are included, and politicians are included, and your friends are included, and your family is included, and so on. But basically, the bottom line is, do your own thing. And you see this all over the place with all kinds of metaphors of one kind and another. It's very, very popular type of proverb.
I'm still thinking of Charles in Nashville with his bull proverb. There's another one here you've got from Madagascar. Maybe this is goes to what you see is what you get, maybe, or, you know, you can't change one thing into something else. It says, the end of an ox is beef. The end of a lie is grief. Yeah. Right. So start with an ox and you'll have beef. Start with a lie, you'll have nothing. You'll have grief.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah, citing that one reminds me that one of the most difficult things of doing a book of this kind is the translation exercise. You know, because all these foreign proverbs, they're always in their original languages to begin with.
Of course.
So turning them into English. Fortunately, I was able to rely on other people to do an awful lot of this. Sometimes I had to do it myself. But it's getting it so that you translate the nice balance and rhetoric of the original to make the point in a nice succinct way is really, really rather tricky. And I think that translation is a rather good one.
Yeah, you even have a rhyme there with our beef and our grief. Let's go to Anthony in Hampton, Virginia. Anthony, you're on the air.
Hi, thank you, Tom.
Yes.
My proverb comes from my mom. She just said, if you don't know what to do, don't do anything.
So where do you apply it right now, Anthony? And has it served you well in life, or has it left you, you know, sitting in the corner doing nothing?
It has actually served me well, because her mind, she thought, if you know what to do, then you'll know what to do, and you'll just go do it. And that's kind of how I've lived my life.
Yeah, that's great. Thank you very much. I'm looking at some here, David Crystal, coming in from the website. And I should say again, lots of proverbs you can catch out of David's new collection at our website right now, onpointradio.org. Here's one from Drew, a Chinese proverb. He who knows he has enough is rich. That may be one that we'll all want to be hanging on to in days ahead, depending how the economy goes. From Joe, don't put all your eggs in one basket, and everybody hopes they didn't put them in a bad basket on Wall Street. Let's see. Here's one from Janine. You know you're getting old when you can use one of your mother's sayings, and it makes sense.
That's almost proverbial in itself, isn't it, really?
Walking a mile in those shoes. What about national character? Does it come through, David, in your... When you look at the proverbs coming out of different continents or different countries, do you begin to see a particular character emerging?
Yeah, absolutely. It turns up mainly in the way in which people make their references to local things. I'm thinking, for instance, of the way they use objects, artifacts of one kind and another, to express a very general truth. I'm looking at the page, for instance, about country variations here in artifacts, the Chinese one. Every day cannot be a feast of lanterns.
Lanterns, as in the holiday lanterns of a Chinese holiday.
Yes, yeah. You can have a marvelous day every day, they're saying, but, you know, the allusion to lanterns is quite specific to that culture. And then you go down the list and you find all sorts of allusions. I mean, take this one from Argentina. Straps come from the same leather. Straps come from the same leather.
Sort of like we're all cut from the same cloth.
All cut from the same cloth. But, of course, leather being so important to Argentina, you get it there. Mm-hmm. A lot of the African ones refer to drums and canoes and things of that kind, you know.
I've got one from Rwanda here. It's sort of a tortoise and hare equivalent. Slowly, slowly makes the slug arrive at the fountain. It may be a slug, but on its slow, slow way, it makes it to the fountain.
Yes, yes, that's right. That's tortoise and hare sort of thing, isn't it, really, from our culture?
Yeah.
And then, I mean, people have beliefs which differ greatly as well. Some of them you have to really sort of probe before you can get at it. But I love this one from Finland. One cannot ski so softly that the traces cannot be seen.
Ooh, no way.
Ski so softly, you know, you'll always leave a trace behind. You know, you can never avoid leaving your evidence there, leaving your track behind. But the reference to skiing, of course, is so perfectly Finnish that it works very well, I think.
Another on speed and its opposite here from Finland. God did not create hurry. And I love this one from Ivory Coast, Cote d'Ivoire. The moon moves slowly, but it gets across the town. I love that. Claire in Shelburne, Vermont. Claire, you're on the air.
Hello, David. For decades now, I've often changed things, including proverbs, to fit my own experience or belief. And here's an example. If at first you don't succeed, try, and then give up.
So you're tailoring, you're altering the proverbs to fit what you've learned, Claire.
That's it, and I'm lots old enough to do it now.
So don't beat your head forever against the wall.
Yeah. Now, that's very interesting, Claire. You've done it. And do you know, when I was doing the book, I went into some school classrooms around and asked the kids about proverbs and whether they knew any and so on. Now, young kids, of course, hardly know any at all. But by the time they're sort of aged 8 or 9, they've picked up a fair few. And the 9-year-olds and the 8-year-olds were already beginning to play with proverbs in the way that you've just mentioned. So that they would say things like, where there's smoke, there's... Now, we'd expect fire, but they said, where there's smoke, there's pollution. And I thought that was really good.
Oh, that's great. From wine and children, the truth, I think, was one in here somewhere.
Another one from the kids I remember, as you make your bed, so you must lie on it, is the adult one.
Yes.
The kids said, as you make your bed, so you must mess it up.
Play and have trouble with those proverbs. Make some trouble. Dorothy in Bolton, Connecticut, you're on the air.
Hi.
Hi.
My favorite one of all in my life is, don't be giving it away for green apples.
And what does it mean, Dorothy?
Well, this old woman, it was like 20 years ago, and I used to visit her and read to her because her eyes were going bad. And I was telling her about a friend of mine who was having an affair with a married man.
Okay.
She said, now you tell her, don't be giving it away for green apples. I just love it.
So
I love it, and I haven't got that one. I haven't seen that one.
Oh, that's an exchange, but maybe not a fair trade there, Dorothy.
You know, and of course it was before Granny Smith apples, now we have, you know, green apples that are supposed to be green apples.
Right, but don't give it away cheap, especially, maybe especially there. Dorothy, that's really good. Thank you very much for that. And one more before the break. Peter in Nashville. What have you got, Peter?
Yes, I have a meaning now for the proverb, the Irish proverb, don't bolt your door with a boiled carrot.
Okay.
Oh, great.
Yeah, the McCain not showing up to the debate.
Yes. We're on the edge of our chairs.
A boiled carrot it has been through the cooker, so to speak. But that doesn't necessarily mean it's stronger.
No, it sure wouldn't. But we're way out there in proverb land. Peter, you've given us one to contemplate in the break here, and we'll do it. Thanks for your call from Nashville. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about proverbs, old sayings, wise sayings from around the world and what they tell us about human nature, human insight, and the many ways we capture those. David Crystal is my guest. He joins us from North Wales, but he's been all over the place collecting proverbs. His new big collection, a couple thousand of them, is, as they say, in Zanzibar, proverbial wisdom from around the world. You can join the conversation. What proverbs have you picked up in your travels? How about that French Dairy Council number? Those who do not eat cheese will go mad. Why? I don't know how to interpret that. What's the weird power of these little sayings in your fortune cookie, in your tea bag? And is it one global wisdom expressed in many different ways or something else? David Crystal, a lot coming in off our website here. Ed K, some head scratchers here, but scratch it long enough and you figure it out. He says, here's one from Ed. The full length of a frog is never known until it's dead. And then from Mary, the one she loves from her father, and it's a good one. Every day your feet hit the floor is a good day. Who can't relate to that? Let's go to Tom on Route 95, the great highway of life near Florence, South Carolina. Tom, you're on the air.
Thank you, gentlemen. Thank you for taking my call.
Yeah.
Many years ago, I had a math teacher, and I had never forgotten what he had told me. Figures don't lie, but liars sure do know how to figure.
Right.
It might be appropriate in the financial world today.
I would say so. They know how to work the numbers, and no question about it. Tom, thanks very much. Drive safe. Artie in Warren, New Jersey. You're on the air. What have you got?
Hey, how are you? Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I was born in Chile, and my mother always used to have a lot of Spanish proverbs, and one of them was "El que mucho abarca, poco aprieta," which translated to English is "He who tries to carry too much holds on to very little."
Try to grab too much and you end up with nothing.
Mm. Right. And she also used to say, also, "Yo sé más por vieja que por diabla," which is, "I know more because I'm old than because I'm devilish."
Artie, thanks very much. Your first one there, what was "El que mucho abarca, poco aprieta"? Maybe pretty good for right now. Thanks a lot for that. Let's get one from Hilton Head, South Carolina. Ed, what have you got for us today?
Hi, Tom. Nice to talk to you.
You too.
My ancient Irish grandmother used to like to elaborate on some proverbs, and one of her favorites, when one door closes, another door opens, and she would elaborate and say, "But getting stuck in the hallway in between them is pure living torture."
Isn't that the truth? I mean, that one, that's actually one that's brought great comfort to me, and I've seen others. When one door closes, another opens. When things are going really badly,
and
it can be a great comfort.
Yeah,
but the path between, yeah, it can be tough.
Don't get stuck in between. And she was also a literalist, and she would say things like, "Well, how can idle hands do the devil's work if they're idle?"
Maybe they find time somehow. Ed, thanks. David, what's it sparking for you?
Well, it's showing the way in which people take a proverb and they apply it to their circumstances. It obviously means a lot to them, but it means even more when they own it, when they take it over and make it do their own bidding. And if that means changing it or adding a thing like the door opening situation or whatever it might be, this proves to me perfectly that proverbs are alive and well and meaningful, even in this computer age. You know, people are still relying on these expressions and making them come living.
We've got more coming in at the website, onpointradio.org. Here's one from my Greek grandmother, says Joanne Kalliansis. Forgive me if I mispronounce that, Joanne. The fish rots from the head. We know that one. Here's another from Susan J. Gill, of all things. Wait for it. She says, my mother always said, don't talk like a fish. The idea, your mouth is moving, but you're not saying anything. let's go to Kathleen in Waltham, Massachusetts. Kathleen, what have you got for us?
I have two that I think from two different parts of the world, but they both go together. One was from a friend of mine in Cameroon, mm-hmm. who always used to tell me, what a woman wants, God wants.
That's and, God as she. Okay. Good.
And the other that I use at home all the time, which I think is somewhat similar, is if mama ain't happy, ain't nobody happy.
Yes, oh, yeah. I heard that one a time or two, Kathleen.
Yeah.
That's the one my children can finish for me when I start it, and it straightens the house out pretty quickly.
Well, when you hook it up with your first, what a woman wants, God wants, it makes it sound like there's just no there's no getting around mama in that picture.
Absolutely.
I love it. Thank you.
This makes me think, Tom, of one of the big problems with doing proverbs in the past. You know, because proverbs have an ancient history, they reflect ancient society and ancient standards of behavior. And one of the biggest problems I had actually in doing this book was making sure that they make modern sense. For example, a lot of proverbs begin, you know, you talk about God as she. Mm-hmm. Well, a lot of proverbs begin with God as he and man as he. And it's they all start, you know, he who does this is going to do that. He who does this is going to do that. And that kind of, you know, sexism is an ancient thing for us now. So I had to make sure that they were all, you know, non-sexist, really. I turned them into plurals, for instance, to avoid either a male or a female bias. And there were even worse problems in some cases, because some of the ancient traditions in some parts of the world are absolutely horrible. You know, proverbs about, you'll only get obedience if you beat your wife. You know, that sort of horror, which, of course, was part of the world for so long.
So some pretty rough and rowdy stuff you write here, not only when it comes to treatment of women, but the view of sometimes neighbors or enemies in a neighboring country.
Especially that, yes. The rude, I mean, the horrible way in which people talk about their neighbors in Proverbs sometimes has to be seen to be believed.
So have you excised here?
Yeah.
So in your Zanzibar collection, Zanzibar and Beyond, are we a prettied up humanity?
Yeah, I'm afraid so. I mean, I really couldn't bring myself to talk about any particular nation in that because it reflects on the climate of the time. You know, there was a time when, let's say, you know, France was at war with Germany, so French proverbs were all anti-German. Well, you know, that doesn't happen anymore. And I think a collection of proverbs has to be relevant for our modern, for the age for which it's written, for today. And there wasn't that much point in reflecting old hatreds.
I also wonder if you thought, as you put all these together, about the use or utility of these over time, particularly in a time when we weren't all so interconnected, where there wasn't the internet and 1,000 ways of communicating and mass media projecting things all the time. Maybe the linguistic structure of the proverbs had a higher value in that time because there weren't as many ways to carry ideas around.
Well, I think you're absolutely right. You know, in school in Shakespeare's time, 1600 and thereabouts, proverbs were part of the curriculum. You know, you learned them off by heart in Latin, by the way, at the time, as much as in English. So you grew up with a huge number of proverbs in your head that you'd been taught. You were taught to translate them from Latin into English and from English into Latin and so on. And that kind of educated tradition carried on right through until, well, I think fairly recently when I was at school. I remember having lists of proverbs that I had to commit to memory. Don't know whether you did you?
I don't think that when I was in school we were asked to memorize proverbs at all, but yet there were so many around, I realize. I grew up with probably thousands stuck in there.
Yeah. But I remember getting exercises in school where you, not only did you have to learn them, if you didn't know them already, that is, of course, some you did, but you had to write little paragraph explaining the various possibilities of what they meant. And that goes back a long, long way to the Middle Ages, I think, in the English language.
It's raining proverbs out there on the website. Here's Allison's, a Japanese proverb she uses with her children. Even monkeys fall from trees. A Chinese proverb here from Barbara. A man always carries his faults on his back. Yeah, hard to get away from it. Here's from Lee, a Yiddish proverb. If I try to be like him, who will be like me? And then Tal having some fun with proverbs. People have their own way. If at first you don't succeed, skydiving is not for you. Okay. Harold in Quincy, Massachusetts. You're on the air, Harold. What have you got for us?
Love your show.
Thank you.
A groovy one.
Okay.
I don't know if these are proverbial or they're just snippets of how you deal with life, but I got these from drunks and alcoholics and drug addicts, okay, that are trying to recover in life.
Okay.
Because it's a big struggle.
Yes.
One of them is, it ain't the thing, it's how you look at the thing. And the other one is, it's better to understand than to be understood. Put it in there if it works.
You've got some good depth there in those, Harold. I love it. It ain't the thing, it's how you look at the thing. it's better to understand than to be understood, a kind of, a kind of exhortation to make the understanding happen on your own side of the equation.
And definitely proverbial in character. I mean, they have all the characteristics of a good proverb, you know, two parts, nice balance, nice rhythm, alliteration, and all of that. So even if they weren't proverbial at the beginning, they stand a good chance of becoming so.
We've got a trucker headed down Route 6 in Utahville, South Carolina. James, you're on the air, my hard-driving friend.
Hello?
Hi, James. You're on.
Yeah, I'm just having a little hard time. I'm a truck driver on Route 6 over in Utahville.
Good.
My father used to have a saying. He would say six one way and half a dozen other way.
Yeah, it's all the same, just about, to be between two options. Absolutely.
Yes, that's right.
Yep.
Six of one, half a dozen of the other. Yes, I've got that one from the UK and a few other places. And some of you who are real keen supporters of that Patrick McGoohan series, The Prisoner, which is being remade at the moment as a film, will remember that that was a catch proverb for that, too. Six of one, half a dozen of the other.
And it helps us kind of make those equations, just to have it captured there. Keep on trucking, James. Adam in Hollis, New Hampshire, you're on the air.
How are you?
Very well. What do you have?
Enjoying your show. And one of the things that I love about Proverbs is they're sort of the collected wisdom of everybody, and anyone is capable of saying one of these things at one point or another in their life. When I was 5 years old, my brother, who was 12, helped me while I was using a hatchet and took it away from me in the process. And I screamed murder, and my father came running out of the house to see what was wrong. And my brother nicely explained that he was helping me, at which point I yelled through my tears, "Help is when you ask for it." It's stuck around our family as a motto ever since.
Help is when you ask for it. So on the spur of the moment, you created a good one there, Adam.
Yeah. Thank you very much.
Thank you. There was, I think, a Chinese one in here, that something about you don't take a fly off your friend's forehead with a hatchet. beware the medicine or the intervention. Frank in Savannah, Georgia, you're on the air.
Hey, Tom.
Hi.
Love the show.
Thank you.
I had a great aunt from, she's French Canadian. And the first saying was, all you can expect from a pig is a grunt.
Right. Don't expect other than what the nature of the thing will provide you. Great, Frank. That's good. Christine in Boston, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom. Thanks.
Yeah.
I found this quote for a friend of mine who was going through a difficult time in chemotherapy treatments. And I don't know exactly where it stems from, but it's when the caterpillar thought the world was over, it turned into a butterfly.
Cosmic. How do you interpret it, Christine? What does it mean?
I think I just like the fact that, if a caterpillar, is stuck on the ground, this is it for him, and then it turns into a butterfly, things can always turn around. So.
Thought it was the end, and splendor ensued anyway. That's a wonderful and hopeful one here.
That reminds me, Tom, of that Norwegian one. Heroism consists in hanging on for 1 minute longer.
Yes, I loved that one.
Like that one.
And isn't it true? Here's Paul in Wisconsin. The smaller the pot, the quicker it boils. So watch out for the hothead and accept the credit and distribute the blame. He says that one may relate to Wall Street these days. We've got Jan in Bethel, Vermont. Jan, you're on.
Hello.
Hi.
I raised 8 children, and what with the projects of homework and chores, I began to tell them, and we all live by it now, do the worst first. Mm-hmm. And I believe even had Wall Street, done their homework before they just went for the big money. That it applies even to that. There are very few things it doesn't apply to.
And do the worst first. Maybe also in the cleanup, deal with it. Don't put it off. Don't try and save the hard work for later. But do it right now and enjoy yourself later. Maybe. Jan, that's great. Let's get one from Patrick in Boston. Patrick, you're on the air.
Hi, I'm a psychologist, and I had a supervisor who used to always say, "No good deed goes unpunished." Which always seems so pessimistic and cynical to me, but unfortunately is quite appropriate at times.
The cynic, it's not just optimism caught in Proverbs, David Crystal. We catch really all kinds of attitudes here.
Absolutely. You get a lot of cynicism. It's all based on you know, good common sense and experience of the world. I mean, so many proverbs do say, you know, oh, life's going to be wonderful if you do this and this and this, and then you realize that it isn't. And so the proverbs then turn back on themselves, and you get this cynical strand, and there are an awful lot of them about. And many of them apply to situations just like they always did, you know, don't take things for granted, that sort of thing. I mean, one that comes immediately to mind from China, which perhaps is very relevant at time of a political debate of the sort you're having at the moment. There are many paths to the top of the mountain, but the view is always the same.
Get to the mountain, there it is. Or a Bulgarian similar one you've got here: water will run where it ran before.
Yeah, that's right. Same point, isn't it, really?
Or water. Senegal, a lobster loves water, but not when he's being cooked in it.
No, <he's kidding.
laughs> Let me try and grab one more from Mark in Port Charlotte, Florida. Mark, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
I got one that I recall from the lyrics from a rock song by Rush, which seems pertinent to our upcoming elections.
Yes.
That Congress is doing right now. And that is, if you choose not to decide, you've still made a choice.
Yeah.
No question about it. Not to decide is to decide. Yeah, that's a great one from the 60s, and everybody's got decisions to make coming up right now. Wonderful. David Crystal, did you end up wiser, or are you driven out of dinner parties now because you're always dropping these proverbs?
Yeah, people don't invite me anymore, I'm afraid that's the case. But, you know, thinking back over the last hour, we've had lots and lots of examples, and we've had two reactions all the time, haven't we? The reaction has either been, hey, yeah, isn't that interesting? Or it's been a laugh, and we've all laughed at it. And that's the point, I think. Proverbs are enjoyable. They're entertaining, they're instructive, and we all learn something from them, but we have a great time while we're doing so.
Well, indeed, we have. We'll go out with one more. The eyes have one language everywhere. And maybe we learn a bit of that from Proverbs from around the world. David Crystal in North Wales, it's really been a delight, and I want to thank all of our listeners for everything they've chipped in. See those at the website onpointradio.org, or get the whole big book, and it is stuffed to the gills, as they say in Zanzibar, proverbial wisdom from around the world. David, thanks very much for being with us today.
It's been a delight, and thanks to all the listeners for calling in.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.